On a Monday morning at this time, we always welcome in our good friend Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning.
You know, we had
you caught me with a spoonful of on-the-stove rice pudding.
Ooh.
Just tasting it. Yeah, I woke up this morning and threw the a pint container of Chinese takeout rice into a pan. I just wanted to save it. And also, I have a sick customer on my hands here who can't eat, who has to eat bland for a while. So rice pudding is perfect for anybody on a bland diet. So even the hospital dietitian seemed to agree with that. I don't know, have a lot of trust in hospital dietitians. But anyway, it depends on the hospital, right?
Yeah.
No, we have a good hospital here in Park Slope, great hospital, Methodist Hospital, which is, this is very, I'm trying to make a joke out of this, but I can't figure out
the joke. No, that's right.
But it's now called New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital.
Yeah, that's right.
Is the full name of the neighborhood hospital. Anyway, this is turning out to be very good rice pudding, I think. So far, it's here's the deal. I didn't really have enough milk for my coffee, and now I'm about to pour the second cup for my coffee and this rice pudding. So now that I have the second mugful here, I can put the milk in. This is really live radio, isn't it?
It is. Hey, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, and I can see how much I have left to put into the rice pudding. But fortunately, I had a container of heavy cream. This is really what to cook when you think there's nothing in the house to eat. Because I even have a can of evaporated milk in the closet just in case, but I don't want to hit it up at this point. So I now have maybe, I don't know, there's another maybe 3 tablespoons of milk here. I'll put that in. You can't have too much milk, I find, with rice pudding. This was, as I say, a Chinese takeout pint container full. They really pack it. And then I put in a quart of milk this morning. And maybe it's now a half a cup of heavy cream, maybe a little bit more because I was using the cream instead of milk. Sugar to taste. I hope I haven't oversweetened this because it was undersweet and I added a little bit more. You know, you have to do this little by little. There's no recipe.
That's right. You build it as you go.
Yeah. So now I have this. It's really a thick porridge. Let me lick the spoon and I'll tell you if it's done. because I want the rice to be soft but not totally, totally disintegrated. And I would say this is going to be done before we go off the air. And I did add a pinch of salt, and I'm cooking it super duper super slowly in a very, just to say, I have a variety of pans to choose from. And I grabbed this one because it looked like the right size, but maybe a tiny bit small in the end. No, it's okay. And it's a tall pan because the wider the pan, the more evaporation. And I wanted the rice to absorb the milk and not for the milk to evaporate. And in fact, only once when I checked it was it simmering enough for any evaporation to actually happen. So you just wanted this tiniest light that you can put under this. And it's now an hour and a half that it's on the stove. And it's almost done, but not quite. Let's give it another 10 minutes.
Now, what's
so? I don't know. It's according to the weatherman, you could have had a frost last night.
We had snow here yesterday.
You did. I knew it couldn't be good.
Yeah, there was not a lot here, but it was enough to. But they had to close a portion of the Mass Pike, which connects over to the New York Thruway, because there was about an inch or two of snow, and there were no plows that were, all the plows were disengaged, so.
Yeah, and also, there's always a danger in the spring when there's a wet snow like that, that branches fall and electric lines go down and phone lines, and, whatever, because, it's all above ground up there.
Well, anyways, we survived. Now, tell me, when I was a kid, I used to love rice pudding. I still do. And I also used to, I always got rice pudding as a kid and tapioca pudding mixed up. I loved them both, but there's members of my family that like rice pudding and couldn't stand tapioca.
Well, I love tapioca pudding, but I'm weird about that. I actually like large pearl tapioca, which is the one that, you know, I used to say it was eyeballs when we were kids. But there is, of course, small pearl tapioca, and that dissolves pretty much. So I don't know. I prefer rice pudding, and it's also hard to find tapioca compared to rice. Every store, even a convenience store, has rice.
Yeah.
And you pretty much can use any rice. This was the Chinese takeout rice, but if you want to start from scratch, it doesn't matter what rice you use. A lot of recipes will tell you to use a short grain or medium grain rice, and yes, those are starchier, but I use long grain rice because I don't keep medium or short in the house. So if I want rice pudding just on the spot, well, you can't do it on the spot, obviously, since it's an hour and a half now, and it's not quite done. And there are many styles of rice pudding. I do not have, you're going to laugh, I do not have any fresh lemons in the house because last night I hit the bottle, so to speak. I decided to make myself a whiskey sour, and then it was so good, I made another whiskey sour, and that was the end of the lemon. So, you know, I could have seasoned the rice pudding with some lemon zest, which would be very nice. I'm gonna, when it's totally done, I'm going to add a little vanilla. There's also, and also I'm toying with the idea, I may still do this, of trying my Grandma Rose's baked rice pudding, which was make a rice pudding, like I am now, which is just milk, sugar, and rice, and then at the end stir in two, in this case I have about a quart of rice pudding, two egg yolks, and pour that into a baking dish. And take the two egg whites and make a meringue. You could put a little sugar in the meringue too. It helps stabilize the meringue. So for the two egg whites, you could use one tablespoon of sugar. After the egg whites get foamy, gradually beat in the sugar, and then put the meringue on top of the pudding and bake it in the oven. I'm not sure what temperature, but I'm guessing that 350 would be perfect and probably. As soon as the meringue is set, it's not going to be firm meringue, but as soon as the meringue is set, which could, you know, probably no more than 20 minutes or so, I don't think you need to brown it, and that's it. They used to sell this, not exactly the same, but this was my grandma's. But if you went to one of the old Jewish dairy restaurants where rice pudding was the thing, was a thing, they had baked rice pudding, but then they would, with no meringue, and then they would top it with, as gross as it sounds, heated fruit cocktail, essentially. It was, they called it fruit sauce, but it was basically fruit cocktail, maybe with a little cornstarch thickening. It was pretty gross, although I do like canned fruit. And I noted recently that Sam Sifton confessed to liking, Sam Sifton, who's the food editor of the New York Times, confessed to liking canned peaches, and nothing wrong with canned peaches. So back to rice pudding, I'm just going to leave it on the stove, and I'm trying to decide what to do. We have a rainy, cold, rare rainy, cold spring, weirdly rainy, cold.
I don't know, I was talking to someone.
Day here. And I note, you know, I sort of gauge a spring day in this time of the year by how many bees are in the blooming apple tree out my window. The tree is in full bloom, and I haven't seen a bee in days. So we know the weather must be bad if the bees aren't coming out to pollinate. So it'll be interesting to see how much. It's crabapple tree, but to see how many little crabapples are on it. Anyway, so one possibility is I bought this stupidly expensive bunch of celery the other day, and I don't want it to go to waste because it was stupidly expensive. And so I'm definitely going to do something with the celery. And how do you use up a lot of celery? You could make a celery soup.
Yuck.
I not my favorite thing either. However, I think I even...
What can it go with? What can you put in with celery?
Well, I like celery myself, as for its own sake. And actually, this is a favorite thing for me to do.
How about potato?
I braise celery. So I happen also to have a stupidly expensive bunch of dill. So I usually...
Well, that's good.
Just put a pat of butter in a pan. I cut the celery on it. I've talked about this on the air, I'm sure, because I do it reasonably frequently, especially when I have a bunch of celery that looks like it's not going to last much longer. And so I'll do this just to use it up. And it's a good vegetable. I mean, it's good fiber. It doesn't have much nutrition, celery.
Got something in it.
Pardon me?
Celery, for me, I can almost, this is a weird word to use, but overdose on celery. There's something in celery that gets, there's something in it that...
Well, they I don't know the process or the exact correct way to put this, but there is something in celery that is used to preserve meat instead of nitrates. Did you know that?
No.
And if you look at
yes.
if you look at a package of hoo-ha
yeah.
hot dogs or luncheon meat, you'll see that the celery is an ingredient because it's a preservative in that sense. And celery has salt.
I love salt.
I always remember my cousin Ron, when he was put on a no-salt diet because of high blood pressure, was told he couldn't eat celery anymore. I said, you know, I don't know why the doctor doesn't put you on medication. There are medications for this now. You don't have to give up celery. Anyway, I cut the celery on a sharp diagonal. I put it in a pan with a pat of butter, or it depends on how much celery there is. It could be two pats of butter. But you don't need a lot. Oh, you could do this with olive oil, too. And toss it around in the hot fat for a minute or two, and then add just enough broth. Could be chicken broth, could be beef broth. Actually, today, I don't have either. I may just use water. Wait, I was going to say water, lemon, dill, but I don't have the lemons. So I guess I'm going out shopping today. Anyway, I'd like to make another whiskey sour tonight. I have this new rye that I'm... drinking, and it makes a great whiskey sour.
What's your recipe anyway, for whiskey sour?
Pardon me?
What is your recipe for whiskey sour?
Well, I mean, I only I looked it up yesterday because I had these lemons that needed. See, I mean, I'm this kind of cook. I cook what's going bad.
Yeah.
It needs to be salvaged. I haven't even finished the celery yet. But anyway, my recipe was 2 ounces of whiskey, in this case rye, but this would work, I'm sure, with any whiskey. In fact, I have a drop of cognac here that I want to get rid of the bottle, so I think I may make a cognac sour. Anyway, 2 ounces of whiskey, 1 ounce of simple syrup, half sugar, half water, it doesn't matter the amount, 50-50, ounce for ounce, and you bring it to a boil and stir until it's clear, and then let it cool. And 1 ounce of lemon juice, freshly squeezed lemon juice. So that's it. 1 ounce juice, 1 ounce sugar syrup, simple syrup, and 2 ounces of whiskey. I don't know. What else do you put in a whiskey sour?
I don't know. My mom used to love them. My mom used to absolutely love. I mean, that was her.
Well, I must. Oh, so wait, that's not the whole. That's just the formula.
Right.
So you pour that into a shaker on ice and shake, 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 and then pour. And then if you want it on the rocks, you can pour it over fresh ice. Or you can just pour it into a sour glass. Whatever that is to you. I'd have to look it up. I'm not a bartender. But there are glasses called sour glasses. So any glass you like. So that's it. I think the shaking on ice is important. It, of course, it dilutes it a bit. And that's not a bad thing. So that's it. Anyway, back to what?
Celery.
What we're going to do today. So the celery, you add your liquid. I think best is broth, but I'm going to maybe do it today with water and dill. And there may be another way to do this, too, that I'm thinking about. Anyway, and that's it. You cover the pan, and you let it simmer until the celery is tender, and pretty much most of the broth will cook away because you're only putting in enough to come up maybe, you know, no more than halfway up the celery. And this will take 10 to 15 minutes. And you can, if the broth gets sort of syrupy, that's a good thing, toss the celery around, and the butter will help make it syrupy, or the oil, for that matter. And if you do it with just water, I think you absolutely have to have an herb in there. And as I said, I have this bunch of dill. And if I had a lemon,
That
would be that. All right. But another way, if I had a lemon, is another. I was thinking about doing this. I do this a lot with string beans, and I even do it with monkfish. Speaking of fish, I think I failed to mention last week when I was talking about monkfish that it is the fish for people who don't like fish.
Yeah,
it has a very firm texture, doesn't have any kind of fishy taste.
My job is to,
unless it's not fresh,
right?
and there are no bones.
I am one of the few people who don't really love fish, don't really love monkfish, and not because I've seen one, a whole one. Maybe it was poorly prepared. Anyway, but
maybe. So here's the way I prepare it lately that everybody seems to love, even Cecilia, who cringed at the thought, this is interesting, of onions with fish, because where she comes from, meaning the south of Italy, almost religiously, fish goes with garlic and not onion. And you don't usually mix garlic and onion either. So when I said I was doing this fish with onion, she said, "Oh," but then she loved it. So it's called, and it's the same, and you can do this with celery, braised the way I just explained. But you need a lemon. So infricasea is a coating, not really a sauce, but a coating of egg yolk thickened juices with lemon of whatever it is you're cooking. So in the case of the monkfish, I braise the monkfish using a little white wine as my liquid, or even white vermouth, because I always have vermouth around, but not always an open bottle of white wine, and vermouth is white wine-based, so why not? And it has herb flavors. So you beat up one egg yolk probably for the celery, because there's not going to be that many juices to thicken. This will thicken the juices. And with some lemon juice, and you pour it into the pan with the little bit of liquid that's left in the pan, and you can make sure that there is liquid left in the pan if you need to by adding a little bit more. And you could take it off the heat, maybe the lowest possible heat, and those juices will thicken up. Dill is a great addition to this, because I love the combination of egg, dill, and lemon. But parsley is great, and really mint. Depends on what the basis is here. In the case of a monkfish, I don't need an herb except some parsley. That's it. Infricasea. So whenever you have a braised vegetable, or in my monkfish case, a braised fish, you can thicken the sauces with egg and lemon, and it's called infricasea. I'm going to empty out the refrigerator, it looks like. I have the celery. I have some dill. I have some carrots that are getting a little sad, so I'll probably roast them. These are things, you clean out the refrigerator day.
Yeah, it's also it's also either a risotto or it's a Ooh. Day. Yeah,
I haven't thought about risotto, but
the reason I started thinking about it is for those of us who aren't in the sweet band, and
pardon me,
for those of us who aren't in the sweet band, meaning that don't love pudding.
What? You don't love pudding?
Right.
She's a weird person.
I know. She's got all these details.
My 5-year-old niece, we're sitting at the table. One of the things she does love is rice pudding, anything with rice pretty much, although she hasn't been introduced to everything with rice. But in any case, And we say, you know, Sydney, you're such a picky eater. And the next day, she asked me in the morning, because we get up early together. She said, am I really a picky eater? I said, yes, you are, because she says, what does that mean? So I told her, well, you won't eat this, that, and the other thing, and you will only eat this, that, or the other thing. And very limited. And, of course, at the end of the list, I excuse me. Sorry.
That's all right. Rice in the throat. Rice in the throat.
Yeah.
Sorry to laugh.
Shutting it off now.
Okay, that's right.
As it cools, by the way, it will thicken more. Yeah. And if it thickens too much.
Yeah. You throw out the pan.
No, then you use it to
No, you add a little cream.
Yeah, I know.
Or else there's a restaurant on Long Island called the Milleridge Inn. And anybody who grew up in New York will remember Patricia Murphy's. And Lorraine Murphy's, well, the Milleridge Inn is owned by the, at this point, 70-something-year-old sons of Lorraine Murphy. And they told me once that, and Lorraine was the sister of Patricia Murphy. Patricia Murphy's Candlelight Restaurant, which started here in Brooklyn Heights, it's on the corner of Henry and Clark. I guess it's Henry Street. And the reason it was called the Candlelight Restaurant is because Patricia Murphy couldn't afford the deposit for the electric company the night she opened. So they filled the room with candles, and it became a thing. And as you can imagine, it was a nice thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're the sons of Lorraine Murphy, who split off from her sister at some point, told me that the secret to the famous rice pudding was that at the end, after it had cooked to the right softness, they stir in ice cream.
Wow.
Ooh.
And of course, it gets absorbed, you know, as the pudding cools. And that's how they came up with the, like, they have a chocolate chip mint rice pudding.
You know, when my grandmother used to cook rice pudding, I used to love to get the pot when it cooled down.
Yeah.
She would let it cool down, and I would with my finger scrape the side, and I'd eat everything that was on the side.
Anyway, yeah, well, that sounds. I mean, I'm using a rubber spatula to do this now, right. So that isn't there, because I think that's an essential part of the pudding. Is that you have to stir rice pudding frequently, otherwise it will scorch on the bottom. Especially, you know, even if you're cooking it at the slowest possible, it still needs to be stirred. And cared for, which, so that's a good thing to do on a rainy day too, if you're in the house instead of in the garden where you should be in the middle of May. Somebody was singing, "When May showers bring June's flowers instead of April."
Right.
May, doesn't it seem that way?
Well, we had like in Connecticut we had 21 out of 30 days in April with rain, and now we are 13 days into May, and I would be willing to bet you we've got 9 of those 13 days at least that's had rain at some point. Or it's just amazing how wet this spring has been.
Well, I remember, however, these things are cyclical.
Yep.
In 1980-something, when I first moved to Cornwall, we used to call it the Cornwall Rainforest because it never stopped raining that year.
Yeah.
April, when we moved in, throughout the summer, everything was extremely lush.
What year was that?
Gorgeous on a sunny day, but we didn't have many of them.
What year?
You know, Bob is my calendar. I would say it was 1986.
Because that summer, is very funny. Because
it had to be 86 because I interviewed you when we first went on the air for some fundraiser early in 1987, and you had just moved. You had talked.
There
about,
you go. Yeah, it was 19. It must have been April 1986 that I moved in.
I just remember there was a Memorial Day right around that time, and I happened to be out at the beach, and my friend Liz and I, she had just had a. You know, her son was born in January. She had a 3-month-old, and we were freezing and driving around. And it was 48 degrees. It was miraculous. And it was just entirely, are you kidding? It's the end of May. So, totally, totally remember those.
Well,
so now I'm stuck with the thought of celery risotto.
That's a good plan. Something, I mean,
you know, that's not a bad, I mean, because celery goes very well with Parmigiano.
Right. That is true.
It's one thing. And it really does have enough, I think, fresh kind of flavor that I wouldn't need broth for that risotto. I could do it with just onion and celery, water. That's a possibility today.
All right.
So I do make a good, I mean, also going back to celery soup, I do make a very good, you know, potato, leek,
ooh,
celery soup. And I almost put it in my last cookbook because it's from a restaurant in Campania. Anyway, it's not important. Actually, it's the restaurant at Feuri di San Gregorio, which is a famous, famous winery in Campania. Anyway, in Avellino. But it ends up, the big deal with this soup was in the middle of the bowl, surrounded by the soup, which was very delicious, was a sfogliatella, savory, not sweet. And sfogliatella is the famous Neapolitan pastry, usually filled with a ricotta cream, and a breakfast pastry. In fact, never, if you're in Naples, don't eat sfogliatella after 1 o'clock. They're not worth it. So anyway, in the middle of it was this, you know, very crisp, flaky pastry floating, and inside was a meat filling.
Ooh.
Instead of ricotta cream. It's very good. So I realized the recipes didn't really deserve to be in the book, and because nobody was going to make meat-filled sfogliatella at home. and the celery soup, you know. But it was good to know that you could do, you know, that it was worth doing.
All right.
All right, so back to our rainy, cold day.
That's right.
Enjoy your rice pudding.
Marshall.
I will. I'm going to add the vanilla now,
right,
and I think it'll be just fine.
And save some for
Bob. And then I'll decide whether I want to bake it or not.
And save some for Bob now.
Well, no, I'm not eating this. Yes.
Okay.
My spouse is in the hospital, actually, and they keep giving him rice pudding, so that's what inspired this. I figured he may come home today. And nothing life-threatening, everybody. Right. It's not nice, but it's not life-threatening.
Right, well,
so anyway, but he'll be very happy to have rice. He's happy to have rice pudding even when he's well.
All right, well, give
a treat.
Give Bob our best, okay?
Take care.
Give my love.
Take care, bye-bye. That is Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. And, of course, you can hear Arthur right here on Robin Hood Radio on a Monday morning. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.